And if you have a Bible, please pick it up. If not, there's plenty back there. So we're back into Pilgrim's Progress, and there were a number of passages actually we could have read this evening that relate. Just chosen two, Proverbs 4, first. There's a stand and a mic. If anyone wants to come and read Proverbs 4, 5 to 19, do it before someone else does. There'll be another reading afterwards as well. Proverbs 4, Mary's first. Well done, Mary. Thank you very much. It's not a race, but we're so polite in Britain, aren't we? Quietly.
Well, I opened my Bible and there was a marker in Proverbs 4.
Oh!
So I just opened it that page.
Oh, Mary. Brilliant. So Mary's going to read Proverbs 4, 5 to 19. Thanks very much, Mary.
He taught me and said, "Lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding. Esteem her and she will exalt you. Embrace her and she will honor you. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction, do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Do not set foot on the path of the wicked, or walk in the way of evil men. Avoid it, do not travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. For they cannot sleep till they do evil. They are robbed of slumber till they make someone fall. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. The path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, shining ever brighter till the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble."
Very much, Mary. And we're going to see in a moment that Christian, in a story, is starting to mature. He's come through Vanity Fair and he's growing as a Christian. And a lot of this we'll see in him, and that's a wonderful thing. And it helps him, as in the passage, to stay on the right path, to not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers with those who stumble. So thank you, Mary. Psalm 63, a precious psalm of satisfaction in the Lord, which again is going to come into our Pilgrim's Progress story. Would someone like to read Psalm 63 to us? Just go for it. Oh, yep. Yep, yep. Yep. Thanks. Psalm 63. Thanks, Alison.
Psalm 63. You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. I will be satisfied as with the richest of foods. With singing lips my mouth will praise you. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Those who want to kill me will be destroyed. They will go down to the depths of the earth. They will be given over to the sword and become food for jackals. But the king will rejoice in God. All who swear by God will glory in him, while the mouths of liars will be silenced.
Thank you very much, Alison. We're going to move over here because there's a number of pictures coming in tonight's edition. So, Pilgrim's Progress. Tonight, a new friend. Christians who are not Christians. A pit, a pillar, and a place of peace. Now, what Bunyan does in the book at this point is move us from the test of suffering to the temptations of prosperity. And these themes, the kind of haters of the gospel to those who would use the gospel for gain. So through the book, he just picks up big themes really that hit Christians, and we're on this one this evening. So Christian, we left off last time, was in prison in Vanity Fair. Faithful has been martyred. But Bunyan says, and it's a great line, that the one who has the power of their rage in his hands frees Christian from prison. Think Peter, the New Testament, so on. So what Christian does is he leaves the town of Vanity Fair. He's passed through it. And he goes on his way, but he's not alone. He is joined by a companion, a man called Hopeful, who was made hopeful after observing the words, behavior, and all the suffering of Christian and Faithful in Vanity Fair. Hopeful makes this brotherly pact with his companion. And so Bunyan writes, one died to bear testimony to the truth. Another rose out of the ashes to be his companion. I don't remember who said it, but the blood of the martyrs is the seedbed of the church, something like that. Faithful and Christian suffering in Vanity Fair magnified, glorified the worthiness of Christ. Horrible things happening. Glorious things happening at the same time. Hopeful was one who saw such hope in these two men in such a seemingly hopeless situation, and he became hopeful. Again, the language Bunyan uses is really great and helpful. And that's what suffering well does. It's one of the wonderful things God does, isn't it? Of course, suffering in us, believers, ought to challenge and grow and get us drawing to God ourselves more. But it also gets other people asking, what is this faith? This must be the truth, some in Vanity Fair have been saying. The witness of suffering is powerful. And persecution often produces the kind of opposite of what we might think would be the case. It often inspires courage and faith in others. So consider the death of the five missionaries in South America. It was 1956. An awful thing. Five missionaries landed, didn't they? And the tribal people came and killed them after all this build-up and prayer and so on. But from that, and many of you know, the opposite happened of what we might thought. It actually galvanized a generation for mission. It actually, in the US, just opened the floodgates for giving for mission. And it brought forth a kind of queue of Christians wanting to get out on the mission field, including two of the wives of those who'd been killed, they went as part of the team to the very tribe, to the very people, and witnessed to them. In the one in whose heart God is at work, when they see the truth and the powerful witness to it of suffering Christians, it can be the very thing that just draws them to Christ. So the application for us, Christian, don't waste your suffering. I speak to myself. It's hard. Oh, it's hard when we struggle, isn't it? James says, let the trial run its course. Let God get the glory, because he knows what he is doing in you and through you as well. So if, like Faithful, you, me, were taken out of the race early tomorrow, imagine that, your life here is coming to an end tomorrow, say. If that was to be the case, in order that it meant another to come to Christ, would we think that a good thing? You don't need to answer out loud. Would we be more praiseful of God? And then, who might you be suffering before today, in front of? If you're going for a hard time, you've gone for a hard time, or we all will, who's going to be watching that doesn't know Christ? Who might see your hardship? And what might it be making them think about God? It's a really important thing, isn't it? And a wonderful thing, which Bunyan again just brings out in this part of the story. So Christian and Hopeful went on, and they were talking together. Soon they overtook someone, and the overtaking is key. There's a reason they overtake this person. It's loaded. The man's name was Byend, or Byends. A bit of a strange name. I don't know of it before this, but outside of Pilgrim's Progress. Others probably do. But it means something like secret purpose or secret agenda. In the context, it's one who says they're a Christian, but in reality they're using Christianity for self-gain. And they say, oh, where are you from? And they ask Byend. And he says, oh, I'm from the town of Fair Speech. Perhaps, Byend says, perhaps I could walk with you. Could be your traveling companion. Christian actually recognizes this man. And again, this is a loaded thing, isn't it? This is us in the world, discernment, recognizing in the moment, hang on a minute, there's something not right here. And he recognizes and he declines. Seems a bit rude, but he declines the offer of him joining them on the road. So it says they left him and they moved on. There's a bit more in the book, if you know it, that is said at that point. But there's actually a lot said, so I'm narrowing it right down. So what we'll do is let's listen to Byend's account of Christian and Hopeful, which he gave to some friends who joined him after. Okay, so let's listen into him, because that will help us. So they go on from Byend, and they're not far ahead down the road. But then these others join Byend's, and they're friends of his. They bow to each other, all respectful, they're mates and so on. And they chat and all the rest of it. And they ask, well, who are those ahead in the road, Christian Hopeful? Why don't we join them? Byend says, I think not. And here it is. They are the type of Christians who press on whatever the weather. They don't wait for wind and tide like we do. No, they risk it all for God. We take all opportunities to secure our lives and our possessions. But they don't care, you know, about what God gives them. Even if everyone's against them, they carry on. No, we're for a religion so far as the culture and our safety will bear it. They're for Jesus in rags. No, we're for ones who, you know, walk with golden slippers in the sunshine and with applause. It's rich old language, isn't it? I'll try to simplify a bit, but what's going on is these men represent those who are happy to be called Christian when things are okay, when the culture is warm to Christians. But if things get difficult, wind and tide, they abandon. They won't face the elements. There's no rags for them. Again, think Paul's letters. He has to do this, isn't he? The Corinthians. You know, this is what reality is for a Christian. And the names of Bayen's friends say it all, really. So here's some of their names. Money love, save all, hold the world, love gain. And what they are prosperity, health and wealth brigade, really they are. And their God, as we're going to see, is really money, it's comfort, it's status. But they latch onto Christianity, even some of them becoming leaders, so long as it improves their own lives, situation, riches, and so on. And Bayend and his friends have this long chat. Again, if you've read the book recently or you know it, it's quite a lot of pages to their chat about material things, about appearing to be religious and using religion. And they agree. They just kind of bounce off each other. They're saying, oh, yeah, it's okay to alter our principles as well if we need to. I mean, it's good, you know, if you go to church, you know, probably get a better wife. You know, you connect better business people when you're in a church as well, opportunities. And it's wise and it's shrewd to act in this way. They say things like this. And they also say, and isn't it silly to risk losing the things that God has given us for God? I mean, why would he want that? So they start trying to kind of logic things up. You know, when we face struggles, we might actually lose things that God has given us that we could use for ministry. There's a sense in that. Again, you see it, don't you? They're kind of thinking. Maybe it's in us. Maybe we've experienced someone who thinks like this. They go on as well, citing riches in the Bible, those who are wealthy in the Bible and so on, agreeing to the goal of having both God and riches. And they talk so much together. And they talk so much and grow in confidence and pride together. Having such a number of things in their conversation that they think justify their position. That they say, hang on, let's go and catch up with those two. Those two narrow-minded. Those rigid, puritanical people. Let's go and see what they think of our points, that they're going to have to agree that we're right. So they catch up. They trot along and they catch up with Christian and Hopeful. And Bayend actually doesn't pose the questions because he said, I don't think they'll like me. You say it to Love the World or whatever his name is. And they put their view of Christianity to them. And if Faithful was in the spotlight in Vanity Fair, Christian's in the spotlight for sort of, yes, that's how I want to be, Lord. That's, you know, in that sense today. Christian answers them and he says, even a babe in religion could give you 1,000 answers. They're straight in. They're going to get it. They shouldn't have. Anyway, to start, says Christian, if it's wrong to follow Christ for bread, as in John chapter 6, how much worse to follow him to try and gain the world? So he's referring to the crowd following Jesus because he gave out bread. Jesus sent them away, knowing their hearts. So he says to them, well, surely God is against following Christ for the world. If that was just about bread, logical point, isn't it? He says as well, the word says, if you're a friend of the world, you're an enemy of God. And let's just note for a minute, they couldn't have picked a worse time, actually, to ask Christian these things. He's fresh from Vanity Fair. He's fresh from witnessing faithful, giving his life. Talk about storms. Talk about tide against. Here they are facing a mature, on fire Christian. He's wise, he knows the word. They couldn't have had a worse time, really, to have asked him these things. He's just fired up. He cites scriptures which condemn those who seek Christ for gain. Pharisees with their long prayers to be seen for dodgy motives. But Simon in Acts chapter 8, wanting the gospel. Can I have the Holy Spirit? Yeah. So he can make money. Let it perish with you, said Peter. And the word, I don't know this, a lot of things I don't know. Simony, registering, simony. I looked it up as well. It's a word, comes from Acts 8. It means the buying or selling of religious privileges. I understand it's from Simon in Acts chapter 8. Christian, to these men, just stacks up examples, reasons why the prosperity gospel is deathly. And then he wraps up with this great line. He says, the one who takes up religion for the world will throw away religion for the world. But of course, he's meaning the one who pretends to follow Christ or says, I'll follow Christ for the advantages they may get. Well, they're going to desert Christ when those advantages desert. It's good, isn't it? And this is, of course, because of who their real God is. It's not the God of the Bible. Actually, their God is the things of the world. They actually love the things of the world more than God. If the tide turns, the weather changes, the silver slippers to rags, that same man will be off, says Christian, because his God hasn't changed. What they will do is just take another way round, another method to access what their heart desires. And Christian ends, to these men, the type of Christianity you love is heathenish, hypocritical, and devilish, and your reward will be in accordance. And Vyend and his friends just stand there, staring at each other. Bunyan writes, a great silence fell on them. And Christian turns to Hopeful again in their hearing. And he says, if these men cannot stand before the sentence of men, what will they do before God? He's kind of saying, you don't need to worry about my judgment. We're just having a chat on the road, and you're condemned by my words, referring to God's word. It's God you're going to stand before, and your practice, your thinking, will not stand before the judgment seat of God. Christian's someone we want to emulate, isn't he? Fearless, wise, discerning, knowing God's word, and fearless. It gives us pause for thought. This gives me pause for thought. Jeremiah says that the heart is a deep well. Who can know it? We don't even know ourselves, do we? We don't even know what we're really, really like. Our motives, the wells of our hearts, are things we need to look into regularly and be honest. Our loves, our faith, we want to keep laying them before the Lord, intentionally so, don't we? We are wise to do that. Father, is there any wicked way in me? Examine my deepest motives. See if there's anything in me is off. Just off, even slightly. We would be very wise to do this regularly. Is there any buy-end in me? Because our loves do get mixed up at times. The benefits of belonging to Christ can at times become more than Christ himself, if we're honest. the practice of Christianity can give way to the use of Christianity. Again, this is helpful by Bunyan, isn't it? Getting us to really think. Maybe the culture of the church, the social aspect of the church, the feelings perhaps we have when we come to church, when we're with God's people. Maybe the status to the leaders in the church, opportunities in the church. They can become the reason rather than Christ himself. It's good, isn't it? Do you agree in your hearts and minds? There's slippery areas, aren't they? This was certainly true for some in the youth group when I was growing up, and I think it's similar experiences for a lot of us. Some came to the youth group not for Christ, and of course, major cut of slack there, but this is still true, but for those of the opposite sex. It was a meeting place. Boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. Sure enough, a number are no longer anywhere near Christ, as far as I know. A simple diagnostic question we might ask ourselves on this topic: if the wind and the tide changes for you in England tomorrow, and me, if the wind and the tide against Christians just boom, other way, I mean, it's going that way, or it just picks up, let's say, where would you be found? Golden slippers, the applause, or the rags? We need to know the answer now. You need to know the answer. I need to know the answer. Well, let's move on. Leaving the Christians who are not Christians, Christian and hopeful, come to a place called the Plain of Ease. This is a quiet place which they crossed easily. And it's just one of those moments God knows when to just ease the pressure, doesn't he? It was a short period, and that can often be the case. We just bounce sometimes from one thing to another, don't we? It just gets on top of us. But there are moments, aren't there, where we're thankful, as they were, for this just this rejoicing and relaxing in Christ. But sure enough, on the far side, they come to a place called Lucra. Sorry. Now, this is like a built into the hillside here. And Lucra is short for lucrative. Lucrative, something that generates a lot of money. So lucre, I understand, is the love of money. And there was a man, and his name was Demas. And Bunyan is not subtle at all here. This is the man who joined Paul in missionary work. But in 2 Timothy 4:10, Paul writes, "Demas has deserted me because he's in love with the world." A really, really sad note in the New Testament. Demas sees them and he calls, "Come over here, come and see this, come and see this thing. I've got something great to show you." Again, we want to be like Christian. His response is greater. He says, "What thing could you possibly show us that is better than what we've got right now on the narrow way?" That is a great response. Let's remember that response. That is the Christian response to the pulling and the lure of the world. What could you, world, Satan, lust of the flesh, all the rest of it, what can you possibly offer me that is more desiring, more rewarding than Christ and his ways? Demas says, "Silver. It's a silver mine. Come in, others have. Come and dig for yourself and find some treasure." And I'll change it for a second. And hopeful says, "Ooh, maybe we should just have a quick look. Have a little look. I've seen a silver mine before. I'll just put this picture up. Keep myself interested in children as well. This is from a different book. I've got a book where I think the pictures are really good. There's just not many of them. So I've searched for other ones." So there they are, looking down at the mine as Demas calling them. And in this moment, hopeful is actually being a bit lured, isn't it? Christian says, no, not me. No, I've heard of this place. I've heard how many have fallen here. This is going to be a hindrance to our walk. This is a snare. And again, let's just note, this is a mature older brother speaking to a younger. It's just what the younger needs, isn't it? A mature older brother. It's one of the blessings, isn't it? Of fellowship, of discipleship. Where one who is more mature in the faith, if you're more mature in the faith, you want to be helping people who are less so. If you're less so, you want to know people who are more so. Get alongside someone who's mature in the faith so they can do this, help you. And he leads hopeful away from the wrong way and to keep on the right way. They continue on and they come across a statue which is in the shape of a woman turned into a pillar. And this is Lot's wife. Lot's wife who loved the world. Genesis 19, the story is they're urged, aren't they? Up and leave, get out of Sodom. Destruction is coming on this place. And she did. She upped and left, but she turned back. Because her heart was where? It was with the world, wasn't it? She pined for it. She didn't want to leave it. And she became a pillar of salt as a testimony to those who would love the things of this world rather than flee immorality, flee lust. And Christian says, oh, this is a timely sight. Right after Lucre, had we listened to Demas, this might also be us. As a warning to others. Here she is. A warning. This could have been us, he says. And this hits hopeful hard. And he's devastated. Oh, he said, what difference is there between me and Lot's wife? Between her sin and mine. She looked back. I desired to go and hunt for silver, didn't I? I didn't go, says hopeful, but what matters is I desired to go. Again, let's just pause. Temptation in the heart. The tenth command is the x-ray one, isn't it? Do not cover. Not going is good. That's good. But not wanting to go is better. Isn't it? But what shows us as clear sinners is just not just what we do, but that which we love, that which our hearts and minds are inclined towards. And if we're honest, that does, doesn't it? It shows us as sinners. Let's also be warned on the point that Lot's wife escaped the judgment of Sodom, but was immediately consumed by another. That is so strong. And it means we should fight sin, all of sin. How easy and how terrible to avoid one sin, one snare, and then to have got, kind of past that and then boom, fall into another. Bunyan says, we want to be pressing hard against all sin, mortifying all sins of the flesh. In response to these humbling thoughts, hopeful says, this is a great line, another gem from Bunyan. Let grace be adored, and let me be ashamed. It's kind of John the Baptist stuff, isn't it? Him, not me. Let Christ be greater, me diminished, lesser. I've got nothing. God is all. Exalt his grace. I'm in the dust. I'm only what I am through him. Again, it's a reminder, isn't it? The wonder of grace, the joy of grace, the difference between us and God. Let grace be adored. Let me be ashamed. They go on And they think and they wonder as well how Demas could be calling people to this silver mine so close to Lot's wife, this pillar that's right there. And they're saying to each other, like, how is he doing the very thing that her pillar presence is warning against? How crazy is that? He's doing the very thing she's got turned into salt for. And let's say Demas is sinning, if you like, right under God's judgment. And they just marvel at how wicked the world is and how foolish. Kind of reminds us, doesn't it, of the hijacking of the rainbow, perhaps? How warped to take the thing which points to God's grace in judgment and just use it for license of all kinds of things. Shortly, the companions come to a pleasant river. And this is called the River of God, the Water of Life. I'll change the picture, but neither of them, I mean, it's better, but Hopeful's face in this just terrifies me. I mean, the artists. We've done Apollyon, haven't we? Yeah, no, we can. I'm sorry, the picture's better. I should have pixelated his face or something. Now you're just going to be staring at it. Take the apple. And in this place, they walked, it says, in great delight, beside still waters, with receiving soul refreshment. And you know where we are, don't you? We're in Psalm 23 territory. And just think of Bunyan's placement of this moment here. Okay, it's key. It's really helpful. They come through Vanity Fair, the horrors, the worldliness of Vanity Fair, the turning from the world. Then they face conflict with these ease, comfort, world-loving people, Christians. A Christian then exhorts Hopeful not to go after the things of the world. Don't go for the satisfaction and the treasures of this world. What's next? What does God then give them? Satisfaction, rest, and ease. And the point he's bringing out is brilliant. But the others made ease and pleasure their God. Bunyan reminds us, when we resist the pleasures of the flesh, when we resist the world, we enjoy to a greater and greater extent the spiritual pleasures of God. The refreshing waters of life. And some of you I know inside, yes, that's true. I have known my greatest moments of joy is when I turn from the world. If you don't know this, you need to turn more. It's a wonderful point. And that's why this is here. Bunyan reminds us of this wonderful refreshment that comes. He's teaching us that when we turn from the pleasures of this world, God is ready to pour in the pleasures of his grace that are so much more enjoyable, so much more fulfilling to follow our Savior. Note also, the Christian life is not the absence of pleasures. It's the mistake the world thinks. Boring Christianity. No, Christ said, I've come to give you life in all its fullness. So we don't fight, and young people particularly, don't fight worldly pleasures of the flesh with the absence of pleasures. So I'm just not going to do that. That's right, obviously. Fight it with the greater pleasures of God. Fight it with the power of a superior pleasure. But the promise of reward, the crown of life, Christ the King who satisfies and who gives life in all its abundance. And the travelers find themselves in this wonderful place. They're in a meadow. It says they lay down to sleep. They awoke. They gathered fruit from the trees. They laid down again by the river And they slept again, and they did this for several days and several nights. It says at times they were singing that Matthew 14 song, songs of satisfaction in God. They're having this spiritual high. They're having this wonderful time of satisfaction in God. The songs about buying a field of treasure, of selling everything to have Christ, despising the pleasures of the world and finding the pleasures of God so much more satisfying. Life of obedience on the road with God is so much more wonderful and satisfying than anything this life has to offer. We need to know that, but more, we want to experience that, don't we? Actually want to know it in our lives. Next time the going gets tough, the tough should not go over the fence and get lost in the badlands, which happens next time. Let's